Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Markets Podcast. I'm Paul Sweeney, alongside my co-host, Matt Miller.
Every business day, we bring you interviews from CEOs, market pros, and Bloomberg experts, along with essential market-moving news.
Find the Bloomberg Markets Podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts and at Bloomberg.com/podcast.
Let's get right to our next guest, Sampath Soumyarayan, Chief Revenue Officer from Verizon, joins us. Sampath, thanks so much for joining us here. Huge global company, Verizon Business Consumer. How has your business changed in the last 2 years?
Hey, good morning, everyone. Look, it's been a good time for us, you know, as networks become even more important, as people work from home, remote work is more prevalent, networks and what we offer becomes really important. And for us, it's also where we are launching 5G. You know, we are right now at the cusp of kind of our second phase of the 5G era, where we turn on our C-band network in a few weeks' time. So it's just a great time to be in this business.
So you are the Chief Revenue Officer. I don't know how deep into the tech you are, but you have to have some view on the safety of 5G. All of a sudden, for the first time last week, I'm hearing that it's capable of messing with airplanes' altitude sensors and maybe would make landing dangerous. To me, it's pretty binary. Either it's dangerous or it's not. What's the deal?
It's not dangerous. Look, safety is of utmost importance to us, and it's kind of number one in what we do. There are 40 countries around the world that have 5G networks in the same C-band that we operate in. You know, planes take off, planes land there really well. One of the countries is France. You know, American planes go in and get out there. What we are proposing is kind of a similar approach to what's there in France, where we kind of have an exclusionary zone just outside the airports where we have lower power levels, so there's no interference. That way, you know, we give the FAA and the FCC 6 months to work this out. But we feel very confident, and we just can't wait to launch the network.
I mean, even if you didn't have that, Sampath, what if you had the strongest, most powerful 5G signals right up the tower? Would it interfere with aren't the bandwidths different? Isn't there someone who made sure that this is a different part of the frequency before they sold you this bundle?
Yeah, exactly. Look, you know, we spent $53 billion for it. And look, the laws of physics are the same, either in the United States or in France or any of the 40 other countries. In fact, in the U.S., the guard band, or kind of the protection band between the spectrum we use and then the spectrum the airlines use, is one of the largest in the world. So there are two different spectrums. We have a very large guard band, and with us, you know, lowering power levels and other technical things around airports, we see absolutely no risk.
So, Sampath, give us a sense at Verizon, again, a huge company. Managing through the pandemic, how has Verizon done it? How has Verizon adapted?
A couple of things. You know, one, we have to balance out four of our stakeholders, you know, whether it's employees, customers, shareholders, and broader society. So just having that balance has been a good framework for us to get through. Second is, look, personal safety is important for our teams, but we also realize that the service we operate, networks, is kind of the backbone of the global economy today. It's the rails on which most of the economy runs on. So So for us, it's been a careful balance of the four stakeholders, as well as ensuring that our networks are up and running at the same time. Now, it's also the same time we decided to, you know, deploy 5G more broadly. Actually, it's been a little faster than what we had planned because our construction has not stopped. We've moved, deployed faster. So, you know, a little bit of good and bad, but overall, just a great time to be here.
The other thing I've noticed from the consumer side, people have been using more data than ever on a level that they probably wouldn't have imagined, not just consuming media content like television shows and movies, but they're doing all of their banking online, and they're starting their cars with their phones and controlling their home HVAC systems with their phones. And we, you know, this was forecast to happen, but I don't think anyone expected it to boom all of a sudden happen inside of a period of 1 year. How is that for you? Are you still offering unlimited data packages? Are people using 40, 50, 60 gigs a month?
Yeah, look, people are using a lot of data. As you said, they use it for everything. I wish I could say everything is for great use. My kids use it for a lot more gaming than they need to. But yes, definitely a lot of data consumption that's gone, which is why the 5G network is critical. Because one of the biggest advantages of 5G is you get more throughput and more speed. So we are literally adding a ton, and a ton is a technical term here, a ton of capacity in the network.
All right, Sampath, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate getting your thoughts there. Sampath Soumyanarayan, Chief Revenue Officer for Verizon.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
I was just typing out a letter to some of the producers upstairs at the Quick Take, at Bloomberg Quick Take. A little pitch for them, because I said, you should have me on more. I can talk about cars. And they were like, all you want to talk about is cars. But I said, look, it's at the center of the economy, probably more so than at any time since Henry Ford started his production line, because these vehicles use more and more chips, especially as they produce more hybrids and EVs than they ever have before. It's connected to the labor story. It's connected to consumer spending, and it's just amazing. Let's focus in on the chips part of it, because we have Nakul Duggal. He is a senior VP and general manager of automotive for Qualcomm right now, and they are, I'm going to guess, the biggest. Nakul, correct me if I'm wrong. The biggest automotive chip maker in the world?
I would like to say we are the fastest growing. Good morning, gentlemen.
The fastest growing. All right. I just know because I was at the Munich Auto Show. I spent a lot of time at car shows, and I noticed so many products there, from the trucks to the cars to Ducati motorcycles, are packing Qualcomm chips. And you can't make them fast enough, right? Are you still at a point where your order books are completely full and you just can't ship them quickly enough to the customer?
You know, that's right. We've been able to stay ahead of the challenges that the industry has had because we prioritize automotive over our other businesses just because of the complexity of the auto industry. But we consider ourselves, Matt and Paul, in a very fortunate position because, you know, we... I would say even as far back as a decade ago, made the call that automotive was a very important adjacency for Qualcomm to start to focus on and invest in as this market goes through a significant amount of transformation. And we are seeing a lot of the dividends of the investments we made back then pay out as we look ahead.
Nicole, maybe you can settle an argument Matt and I were just having literally here in the studio about, you know, I was questioning why are we still having such a pronounced chip shortage on a global scale? Matt says it was, you know, just unprecedented increase in demand across a range of products. I said, no. I think it's got to come from the supply side, that maybe plant closures in Asia. And so this really came on the supply side. But
that was so long ago.
I know, but I'm just thinking these chip guys have got to figure this thing out. So settle this debate for us.
I think there are a few different things going on. You know, I think, first of all, electrification is creating the need for new architectures for vehicles. So there is a lot of focus as you look at the next generation modern car to move towards an architecture that relies on semiconductors much more heavily as it has. As you know, the car industry is moving more towards the mobility business, which means you have to be able to have a tremendous amount of software and semiconductors that power that software. What compounds the complexity is, as we went through COVID, the automotive architecture has relied on a variety of different vintages of semiconductors. As architectures in automotive haven't evolved for a long period of time, there is a dependency on older architectures that use semiconductors in lagging process nodes. That's where most of the complexity is, where you've been developing semiconductors on older nodes for a long period of time that have a lot more complexity to modernize. The complexity is much less when you talk about the next generation nodes. So what we are starting to see is a significant transition towards newer nodes. You can't completely get yourself out of the dependency on older nodes, but a significant faster transition to newer nodes, which obviously plays to our advantage.
I've noticed some car makers are just dropping functions completely because they don't have the chips to power them. For example, about 10 years ago, a lot of the car makers started offering the stop-start technology where your motor switches off at a stoplight. Car guys hate it, right? And always try and disable it. Now, I've noticed some car makers like GM, I'm building a truck on their website and they say, no stop-start feature anymore. So you get $50 back. Are you going to see more of that, you think, Nicole, or less of that? Are we at a point where this is getting better or still worse?
I think it's an excellent question. I think that's an example of there is a dependency on a small microcontroller that is in short supply and is going to be harder to get around. The transition we are seeing, Paul and Matt, is that those types of functions are moving to software, to where you have much higher performance application processors that the auto industry is now embracing, and a function like stop-start can actually be integrated as a software function into that higher-end processor, as opposed to rely on a simple, discrete microcontroller. So you will start to see examples like this play out, and that functionality gets subsumed into larger application processors that then manage that functionality through software.
All right, Nicole, here's the money question. When is this chip shortage going to be addressed here? When are we going to be back to more normalized supply demand?
Well, you know, I think it's a complex question because it is a bit different for each automaker. Everybody has a slightly different type of challenge. The smaller automakers are going to be able to get around it faster, especially if they move to newer architectures. The larger ones that have a lot more complexity, a lot more diversity across their portfolio have a lot more dependency on the complexity of the semiconductor crisis. But I would imagine, you know, I think towards the end of 22, we should certainly start to see the industry come out of a lot of this complexity on the whole. From our perspective, we've actually been able to stay ahead of this challenge, but clearly we supply a portion of the overall semiconductor portfolio within a vehicle.
Nicole, what's the smartest car out there? What's the coolest, highest tech vehicle that you could buy right now?
Yeah, I think you know, there are several because we have so many different partners and customers that we work with. But you know, one thing that we are very proud of is the fact that the strategy that we have laid out over the last 5 years has now culminated into what we call the Snapdragon Digital Chassis, which is basically enabling automakers with the newest tech, the latest semiconductors and software connected to highly complex ecosystems, whether it's in the autonomous space or in the digital cockpit experience or 5G connectivity. and bringing that together to help automakers make a much larger step up in terms of modernization. We've been working with General Motors for a number of years, for over 20 years, and Mary Barra announced the partnership with us here at CES a few days ago. We are very proud of the Ultra Cruise work that we've been doing with them, which is a level 3 door-to-door autonomous service. We made an announcement with BMW back in November on ADAS. Volvo has been working with us as well. Difficult to pick one of my favorite customers.
All right, Nicole. Nicole Dugal, Senior VP and General Manager Automotive for Qualcomm. I don't know. They need to get more chips out into the marketplace. That's what their customers are demanding. We'll see how long that plays out. We talked about that deal, Take-Two, again, buying... who are they buying? It's another thing.
Take-Two buying
Zynga. Zynga, right. 64% premium.
$12 billion, $13 billion.
Large. Yeah, that's size. I didn't know there was that
for
big
Farmville, right?
I know.
For Words with Friends. It's not even Scrabble. It's an also-ran.
All right, let's check in with an expert here on this deal, Amin Bensaad. He is TMT analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence. Amin, thanks so much for taking the time here. Is this a good deal for Take-Two? Their stock is trading down.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for having me. And I think this is a very good deal for Take-Two, especially as when you look at the numbers in this deal. First of all, it looks like this is the largest video game deal ever from M&A standpoint. And second of all, Take-Two, previously they had almost 10% of their sales from mobile, and this deal is going to, you know, in the next few years, it's going to push that to over 50% of sales going to mobile. And that's important because mobile is the fastest growing, gaming segment.
I find that so hard to believe because I don't know what you can do with mobile. I love video games. I have ever since, not Pong, but, you know, Galactica. And all the way through Super Mario Brothers with the Nintendo 3 and the Sega up through, you know, now I'm playing Xbox all the time, Call of Duty, and even Red Dead, unfortunately. I hate it, but I play it. What can you do on mobile? Aside from Angry Birds, right? How can it can't even get complex enough.
You know, first I would say you actually impressed me earlier when you mentioned ColecoVision, which is the, you know, one of the oldest gaming consoles even before Atari. So that was good gaming knowledge there. I didn't even know about that. But from gaming, you know, mobile has been very successful because they don't target gamers. They target a segment in the population called hyper casual gamers, right? Somebody just plays Candy Vision a little bit, plays some puzzles or some, you know, farm reels or work with friends. And that's why this segment has imploded in the last few years. And especially in Asia, it has been doing really, really well. So really, it's the focus on the hyper-casual, quote-unquote, gamers. That's why there is a huge success in this platform.
I also wonder about the lack of gamers. Are we worried that, you know, the world just isn't producing enough young people?
We're going to actually read a book.
We're gonna have enough video games for sure, but are there enough consumers for all this content?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think overall, globally, if you include the hyper-casual gamers, there is over 3 billion gamers right now. So it's not going to be the lack of gamers, especially with this new generation. They are basically born in gaming. If you think about Fortnite and other games like that, gaming has become much more mainstream than it used to be back then. And now it's a $180 billion global industry. So this industry is growing, the user base is growing, so it's not going to be lack of gamers. I think to your point, it's probably the lack of content, and especially during the pandemic, all the major video game makers were impacted by the pandemic, so they have lower content than they expected. And talking about this deal here quickly, Take-Two kept delaying news about GTA 6, Grand Theft Auto 6, which is one of the major games being awaited in this industry. And this is why this deal kind of makes sense to remove some of the headaches in the top line that this company will be facing.
All right, Amin, thanks so much for bringing us up to date on this big deal in the gaming space. Amin Bensaad, TMT analyst, Bloomberg Intelligence. Matt,
Amin, if you're still there, are you a gamer too?
Yes, 30 years gaming, which means I was a baby.
I started actually on the Commodore 64 playing Space Taxi and Mule
And yeah. I've noticed a lot of these games are coming back now. You can get them on your phone. That, to me, is an interesting thing, that these vintage games are coming back.
Oh, yes. Like, especially the indie companies, they're smaller ones. They make games like that because they don't require a lot of resources. And that's why you see Netflix, even Netflix, getting into that. So, yes, those are coming back because they have a lot of interesting stories there.
Very cool. Okay. Paul, you're not a gamer.
Of course not. I'm an adult.
Okay. I bet you would like Mule. I'm going to show you Mule during the break, and then we'll see if you can get into it. Because really, it's a market
game. I aged out after Atari. How about that?
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
The Goldman Sachs that I grew up with and I competed against was investment banking and investment banking. And that was basically in bankers and traders. But since the great financial crisis.
Who was running it then? So John Whitehead?
It might have even been like, yeah, probably Corzine for a while there. I mean, going back in the day. But they've always been the big bank, the big trading desk. But really, since the great financial crisis, they've been really branching out into more consumer businesses. And I saw in some news there, Goldman adds GM credit cards to its Marcus consumer business. I just shook my head. But what happened to my old Goldman Sachs? All right, Shanali Basak, Wall Street reporter for Bloomberg News. She joins us here. She follows the Wall Street beat closely. Goldman's continuing to expand out its consumer business, right, Shelley?
Yeah, listen, this is the second big partnership that Goldman is announcing here with General Motors. Of course, we know they had that big relationship with Apple before. What you're seeing here is Goldman start to branch into new places. So card business, to what extent do they have their ambition to launch their own credit card without the co-brand? And also, what does General Motors give them? General Motors already has billions of customers in their own credit card business. So now by partnering with Goldman, the hope is they could really expand on the millions of customers they've been able to amass with Apple. To your point, General Motors was previously an investment banking client, which they then converted now into... Do you not buy it, Matt? Is that...
You know what? Grass grows faster than Goldman Sachs' consumer business. This has been years in the making, and they seem to have done very little with Apple. I mean, they could take over your life if they wanted to. Apple and Goldman Sachs together, you could do everything. One-stop shop, from savings to checking to investment, credit card. I mean, you name it. They're just not doing it. Marcus has taken forever to get off the ground, forever and ever and ever and ever. We've been talking about it since you were in high school.
That's not true. I mean, in the last couple of years, they have. And remember, these are very highly regulated businesses. To your point, Goldman makes a couple hundred million a quarter on their consumer business.
But look what Revolut and N26, they came out of the gates running, ready to win, picking up customers by the millions.
So far. And where are they based?
In Europe.
Exactly. So it's been a lot harder in the U.S. for the big banks to really get their technology in line, which is what makes these partnerships and these efforts so interesting.
They just need to buy the technology. They already run the government, right? So they don't need to worry about regulations.
Well, let's see if the government buys them. The idea of the government allowing Goldman Sachs to buy like a Stripe, for example, which is a lot more back-end infrastructure. The biggest payments companies in the U.S., Matt, the biggest tech companies are all back-end financial companies buying backup credit cards. They're not consumer-facing businesses.
All right, we're going to have the Super Bowl this year where SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles. SoFi is a brand I know. So it's a brand that Goldman Sachs knows. So to Matt's point, I'm almost at the point.
Run by a former Goldman Sachs banker.
That's exactly right. Anthony Noto is right there.
And but that's only, a $10 billion company.
I was going to say, it's only $10 billion company. So you buy that with a couple partners' pocket change. But at least that gets you brand awareness. Because I think to Matt's point, one of the things I'm surprised about is the brand value, the brand awareness of Marcus, I think is still obscure to the
nth
degree.
Think about what you can get from it. They just launched investing products. They have had that savings product. This is the year that they're probably going to open a checking account. Once they open that checking account is when they can be a real full-scale bank for consumers in a bigger way. But to your point, they are not that yet by any means.
I mean, remember when we all got so excited about the Apple card before it came out? Oh my God, Apple's going to release a credit card. This is going to change finance forever. I got to get one. Do you have an Apple card?
Nope.
Neither
but
one
I
of you
But I use Apple Pay.
Neither do anything? I. Of course, we all use Apple Pay, but look, they could just do so much
I was
more.
I'm kind of psyched that I made the leap to Apple Pay.
Listen.
Paying my subway rides with Apple Pay.
Listen, the car business is the harder one too, because you have Chase Sapphire, you have Citigroup, the biggest card issuer in the world, Barclays, you're competing
and
with...
they both offer better rewards programs than Apple and Goldman Sachs. Why? Not because it's hard to think of offering a good rewards program. The numbers are there. All you have to do is beat the numbers. And they make a ton on interest rates already. They don't need to worry about the padding. They have that.
Well, actually, the interest rates they're not making anything off of right now because people are paying back their cards. But this is why this is now, into this year, a big deal. Because people are starting to borrow again at a much bigger scale than they're taking out any other type of loan. And so to get into it now is a good time. But yes, it is an extraordinarily hard time to get in the card business because people want rewards. They want them in all forms, shapes, and sizes for different products. They want them in crypto sometimes. So if you can't give your client everything, then can you compete in the space is a perfectly legitimate question.
All right. I think we're saying basically this isn't a typical Goldman business because it hasn't just got that traction that you would expect this Goldman effort to do. But we'll see how they continue to invest in it, and we'll see how it continues to grow into the business. Shanali Basak, thanks for joining us. Wall Street reporter for Bloomberg News, joining us here in the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio.
Thanks for listening to the Bloomberg Markets Podcast. You can subscribe and listen to interviews at Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast platform you prefer. I'm Matt Miller. I'm on Twitter at MattMiller1973.
And I'm Paul Sweeney. I'm on Twitter at PT Sweeney. Before the podcast, you can always catch us worldwide at Bloomberg Radio.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.